Good morning, Rabbi Isai. After yesterday's Kiddush, on to a new one. Anyway, a discussion. I saw a discussion in the Sefer as to he asked the question, why do we not make a brocha shechionu on al bir chometz? Okay, we've been mekayim a mitzvah which comes mizman lizman. The mitzvah is the mitzvah of tashbisu. And therefore, l'choya, one should make a brocha on a brocha shechionu on the mitzvah of tashbis of hashbosas chometz. Whether you would make it in the evening when you make the brocha al bir chometz together with that, or whether you do it in the morning, but we don't make it at all. So he brings down there that because the kiyum of the mitzvah is through a bizoyan ochlim, in other words, we're wasting good food in theory, therefore it's not something to celebrate. It's something we have to do. But it's not something to celebrate that we should say Shechionu v'kimonu v'gionu, as Baruch Hashem, we've arrived at a situation where we are burning good food. And that comes back to the question of Bal Tashchis and the general question Bichlal. What is not a korban oila a waste of good food? All the korbanos, right, seem to be a waste of good food. Whatever you bring on the Mizbeach, whatever you bring on the Mizbeach, l'choya, is a waste of good food. Not the Teretz is going to be. That the Ribbono Shel created the world, and he created certain animals for eating, and he created certain animals for burning. Now, this was a discussion that I've had, we've discussed it before, with the caterers about the soup that's served inside a bread. Yeah, where they hollow out a bread and they serve the soup. Most of the bread goes to waste. Or the salmon that appears, you know, at a kiddush and is decorated all the way around with pieces of little tomato and cress and all sorts of stuff like that. And all that food goes to waste. The salmon might be eaten, but the decoration goes mostly to waste. And I've asked the caterers about it. The caterers say they've discussed it with their kashrus authorities. And the kashrus authorities say that decorating, that means the tachlis of this particular piece of cress, when the Ribbono Shel Olam created it in the world, was to enhance the pleasure of eating the salmon, or the pleasure of looking at the salmon and enjoying the salmon and taking the salmon. And therefore, it's fulfilled its tachlis, and that tachlis was not necessarily eating just because it is edible. Here, pardon? You haven't had it for years. You obviously don't go to the right chasnas. You
get. There
could
be no restaurant in
Yerushalayim.
What?
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Very nice.
Right. So there's not many people unless there's a drosha immediately after the soup, because then people sort of nash the challah because they're bored. Yeah. So, but otherwise, generally speaking, most of it goes to waste. Yeah. They did say to me, by the way, that the whole of the bread that's hollowed out from the middle of the bread, the soft bread that's hollowed out, they use that, they put it in the mincemeat or whatever it is. Yeah. No, we used to say in yeshiva that on Sunday we got mincemeat, which contained all the leftovers of the challah from Shabbos. Yeah. And we used to say about the cook, Zichron Levrocha, that who noisen lechem lechol bosor, that he adds the bread to the meat. Yeah, that's what he used to say. Anyway, So, but I'll call upon them. The question really is, yeah, are we wasting good food, or is that the tachlis of it? Comes back to another shaila, and that is, there are some people who turn up at bir chometz with bags and bags and bags of food. They've got loads of bread left, they've got leftover sliced breads, they've got boxes of cereal, and all sorts of stuff, and they come along, and they're burning a great deal. Now, l'choya bir chometz, I've got a mitzvah of tashbisu. There is a clear, I think it's in the Minchas Chinuch, as to whether or not you have to burn anything at all, right? Is Pshat Tashbisu that I must burn some chometz? Or is Pshat Tashbisu that I have to get myself into a situation where I have no chometz left? In which case, if I calculate, what do we do? Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos. On Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos, we calculate out exactly how much we want to eat, and we try and eat everything up. And whatever's left over, we flush over. But if there's nothing left over, well, we mevatel the mitzvah of Tashbisu, we weren't. We got ourselves into a situation where there is nothing left. And in fact, there's even a suggestion in one of the poskim that the fact that you eat the chometz on Erev Pesach, yeah, is that's the destruction of the chometz. I'm mekayim the mitzvah of Tashbisu, yeah, by consuming the chometz. So what's the difference between that and burning it? In fact, I think there's one person even wants to suggest that it could be that Tashbisu, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you have to do it al yidei eish, that you have to burn it to a dafka strafa and not other ways, it could be that the strafa takes place inside your stomach, and therefore you mekayin the mitzvah even with strafa. But however you look at it, right? If I could be mekayin the mitzvah of tashbisu without actually going to a fire and burning anything, then maybe going to a fire and burning something should be about tashchis. Anyway, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow.
Started at Turaway, Northwest London, Tuesday, Yud Gimel Nissen, 31st of March. Rabbi Malcolm Herman Schlieter, CEO of Seed UK. I got the insights and stories. This week's Torah is sponsored by Nishmas Moras Baruch Abbas Rabbi Eliyakim Yehuda Olya Sholem and Ilu Nishmas, our esteemed founder, Rabbi Yosef Dov Ben Rav Shimon Chol Tzvi Itzkovitz Zichrono Livracha.
First of all, thank you for the invitation. I haven't been here for a while. I'm so pleased you dedicated in memory of Dudi. He was the one who first invited me, first time I've had a chance to speak here since his patira, actually. So, absolutely, that's appropriate. Just a little plug, I don't know if you saw the advertiser which came on Thursday night, you know the advertiser, the Northwest London advertiser, type of thing you read when it's too late to go to bed early. And anyway, this came with it this week, a beautiful booklet produced by Seed with ideas and stories and creative ways of enlivening the Seder night. So if you haven't seen it, it needs to have a look at home. So we're going to look at a number of ideas for Seder night. Let's start off with an overarching Hashkafa idea, which I don't think we've discussed here before, but really crucial, and it's all from Rav Dessler. And it's a great way to introduce Seder night, certainly those with a more adult audience. So we know, as Rav Dessler explains, as others explain, that this physical world is simply the manifestation, the representation of the spiritual world. Really, the spiritual world is the origins of it all, and the physical world is a representation of the spiritual world. That's putting it very, very briefly, but that is a core concept in Hashkafa. So if in the physical world we experienced slavery, that means that somehow or other in the spiritual world we were subjugated. If in the physical world we experience freedom, that means in the spiritual world there's the prospect of personal liberation. As Rav Dessler explains, with every chag there is an energy, every chag we can tap into it, and every chag we can utilize and maximize what is on offer. So what exactly was this physical and spiritual of Mitzrayim? The spiritual of Mitzrayim. So, famously, amongst others, Rav Dessler notes that the word for Mitzrayim means tzoros, tzar, meitzar, constraint. Even in, I'm not sure if it's Yiddish or English, or Yiddish and English or Hebrew, a mixture of both, the person says, oh, have I got tzoros, right? In essence, it's a Hebrew word. Tzar means pain, right? And why is it that the word pain is described as something narrow? Because if chas v'shalom, a person has a pain, even if it's in your tooth, or then you cut your finger, and it's a tiny percentage of your body, you can't think about anything else. Can't think about us. Until I've got my tooth to say, sort it out, please don't talk to me. Right, doctor, would you agree with that? Until I've got my ingrown toenail sorted out, I can't do anything else, right? I'm incapacitated. So, that's why pain is called tzoros. Here in Mitzrayim, the word itself means a spiritual constraint. Meitzar, we were constrained. Somehow or other, our spirituality was constrained, it was squashed, it was compressed. Now, what is very interesting, which Rav Dessler notes, is, and I have to say this, well, Dessler notes it, but I've expanded on it, if I may, that in fact, the word, you would expect that the sovereign of Mitzrayim, Paro, that his name or us, would somehow reflect the fact that he was the king of the epicenter of narrowness. Mitzrayim was defined as the epicenter of spiritual narrowness, and we would anticipate that his name would somehow reflect that. However, his name is Paro. And the root of the word Paro, Pei Resh Ayin, means?
Wild.
Exposed. Where do we find it?
Pero,
that's with an Aleph.
That's
an Aleph. But where do we find it, even with an Ayin? Well, this is very interesting, but we'll come back in a second. We find it in mainly Parashas Kisisa. Lamed Beis Kofei, Vayar Moshe Sa'am, Ki Faruahu. Ki Faro'oi Aaron, the Shimson will come in. Aaron has allowed things to go unbridled, wild. If you look at the same word, Pei, Resh, Ayin, Hei, the same word as Paro. I'm not an expert in this, but one of my former great colleagues, Rabbi Silver, who was an expert in Hebrew language, he did note that many words will begin with Pei, Resh, have this expression of breaking out. Para, which is wild beyond boundaries. Piritzah, which is a breakthrough, a boundary. Even a perek, where you take something larger and you break it down into smaller parts. Prachim, both with the ches and the chof, etc. Flowers, crumbs, breaking things down.
Perets also.
Yeah, that's right. Breaking things down. But here, we've got the word parua, paro, which literally means to break out. No boundaries. So it's a bit strange that the king of the epicenter of constraint was called a name that means no boundaries whatsoever. So pshat is a very, very interesting pshat. That, of course, Paro, there was a complete contamination in Mitzrayim. Complete contamination. Well, I used to say to my kids when they were younger, certain types of music, actually non-Jewish music, we used to call it contamination. Combination, contamination. Tumma, this is contamination. A contamination. Now, and therefore, Paro opened his boundaries. But he opened his boundaries to a world where there were no borders whatsoever, to a licentiousness, to an immorality, to a tumma. So his openness created our narrowness. Moshel. I remember one occasion when our children were very young, and we said to them, pack for the holiday. Very good. Up they go, upstairs, pack for the holiday. Their case is full of toys. No space for anything else. I said, what are you going to do when you get there? You're not going to wear anything? I mean, what are you going to do? You have to, you've filled it up in such a way that it's made no space for what you really need. Therefore, when Paro filled the culture of Mitzrayim with Tumah, with the antithesis of Kedusha, with pagan idolatry, what happened is that we became filled, that it squashed our spiritual possibilities. We became filled, that it squashed our spiritual possibilities, and absolutely left no room for our spiritual development. So therefore, his openness created our constraint. If you want to put it slightly more poetically, the inappropriate openness creates spiritual constraint. An appropriate constraint creates spiritual openness. Inappropriate openness, if you allow everything to flood your mind, everything, all the noise of the world around us, all the tumult of the world around us, to flood our minds, to flood our bodies, to flood our hearts, to flood our souls, then it leaves no room for spiritual growth. On the other hand, appropriate constraint, appropriate boundaries, just like Shabbos is, creates space for spiritual openness. That's what it is. Very interesting. If I can put it in a slightly contemporary way, I spoke in the city last week, put it in a more contemporary way, that our own lives are very full of noise. And then the noise kind of fills us up, become inflated with that noise, fills us up, until we get chomus. That's what happens. And what we're trying to do is detox. We're trying to remove all of that contamination, all of that detox, and get back to simple matzah, as it's called, the bread of emunah. The bread of Emunah, because that's what it is. It's about eradicating all the detox that fills our lives, all the noise that fills our lives, and getting back to the basics. That's just an opening idea for Seder night on a more sophisticated level, if you like. So that God is constructed, Maschil Pinos and Messiah Meshevach. I want to share a few ideas that you can open out the discussion. That is, the Gemara in Pesachim says you have to have this structure of beginning with a negative and ending with a positive. We have discussed this once or twice before. Imagine speaking at a simcha, and maybe the person has been through a very tough time in the past, whatever it is, and maybe life hasn't been so straightforward, and you get up and you refer to maybe some of their less glorious moments at the simcha. I remember the time when this isn't the time for this, you know what I mean? Let's just get on with the simcha. No one starts talking about the time. But that's the structure of the Haggadah. So first of all, I think it's a great discussion. I'm always in favour of, although this first point was slightly longer, this first point itself could be done in a very discursive way to discuss the tension between Paro and Mitzrayim. He opened that to discussion. Very discursive way. But I'm always open for ideas where you can open it out to the floor. So a good question, it's quite a simple question. Why is it the Maschil Beginos from Simon Shabbat? Why? Why should we do that? Why not just launch into the good bits and let's get going, and it's a night of celebration, and why should we refer to the negative past? So that's a good discussion in its own right. First of all, Gemara in Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, as to which is the Gnus, whether it is the Mitchil Ovdi Vedo Zora, or whether it is Avodah Meyinu. Right, Machlokas, Gemara, Rav and Shmuel. But we can discuss. So Rav says, between rounds, that it's Avodah Vedo Zora, and the other option is it was Avodah Meyinu of Pharaoh Mitzrayim. Either physical slavery, or, as the Slonim Rebbe puts it, the damage to Kedusha. It's either Avodah Zora or damage to Kedusha. So others learn simple pshat, that it's either damage to Kedusha or the physical slavery. the collapse in the munna, which is over the Avodah Zarah, or the physical slavery. Slalom Rebbe learns it's actually either a collapse to Avodah Zarah or damage to our Kedusha. The Pharaoh of Mitzrayim, Pharaoh represented the damage to our Kedusha. But again, the question is why? Why should we start with this negative perspective? So you could open out to the table, if we're all sitting at a satellite table here with all the time in the world, we would discuss it. I want to suggest three ideas that could be suggested. One is an idea that, I'm not an expert in Maharal, but Maharal mentions in a few places, that we appreciate when in contrast, we appreciate by contrast. We appreciate light when we've emerged from darkness. And in many respects, going through the darkness accentuates the power of the light, highlights the power of the light. So one simple idea, one important idea, is that quite simply, we really appreciate the redemption once we've had some sense of feeling of the darkness, of the Golus. And therefore, the purpose of the Golus, and the purpose of the focus on the Golus, is to help us appreciate the redemption. One pshat. Second pshat is, it's just slipped my mind. We'll do the third pshat. Hopefully this will come back to me. And would like to suggest the second pshat. A little moment there. Any suggestions of a second pshat here?
Maybe it's to encourage us that we have the possibility
of... Oh, thank you very much. Can I say this last year? Thank you very much. Very good.
Save that.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to put it... This is actually a thought I saw from the Kozhich the Maggid. But I'm putting it in my terms. It's his thought. I think I did mention it 5 or 6 years ago here, which I assume you all remember. I'm going to put it in my terms, his idea. There's really often two groups of people in the world. There's what we call the if-only Nicks and the only-if Nicks. If-only and only-if. If you are sat at a Shavuot Brachos next to an if-only person, I'm afraid you're in for a miserable evening. Because that's the chevra, if only I would have gone to a different primary school, if only my parents would have, if only I should have, if only I didn't. If only, they're constantly living in the past. Living in the past which you cannot change. Says the Kozhich Maggid, the purpose, part of the purpose of going through Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is to be an if-only person, not an only-if. If only we take, only if we man up, only if we face the future, only if we take the opportunities in front of us, then we can transform our lives and make something of it. So the purpose of going through the negative is to show you Klal Yisrael could have been an if-only people. If only we hadn't been worshipped Avodah Zorah, if only we hadn't gone down to Mitzrayim, then we could have made something to ourselves, but what could we do? We had no choice. We had no choice, we had no chance, we had no opportunity. No, says the God. Now we come to Har Sinai. So we're not an only if person, we're if only we take responsibility as we did, if only we man up as we did, then we can achieve. By the way, I didn't quite finish off on the Maschil Bagnos, I'm sorry, the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, whether it's lack of emunah, lack of kedusha, says the Son of Rebbe quite beautifully, this now follows through. Because what were the two mitzvahs that we had to do in order to come out of Mitzrayim? They were? Dan Pesach represents our restoration of emunah, and Dan Mila represents our restoration of kedusha. Condition goes together. And also, I mean, he has a very strong theme, the Slalom Rebbe, through several parts of I'm not thinking very clearly today, because I only had one coffee on the way here, that's the reason, so that's fine. But we didn't answer our fundamental question. You didn't pick me up on it. Didn't answer our fundamental question. Why begin with Bignos in the first place? Well, we did partly. I have a third answer. Let's just summarize. I asked the question, Maschil Bignos, why? We said contrast is number one. Only if only is number two. And the third answer, this beautiful answer, says the Son of Rebbe, because part of Seder night is to know that a Kodesh Baruch Hu loves us unconditionally. We were chosen as his people. He may not always like what we do, in fact he doesn't. But as a people, we're bound to him forever. And listen to this beautiful idea. As one psychologist puts it, sometimes our children need our love the most when they deserve it the least. They've misbehaved. They behave really badly. That's when they need our love the most. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in, we're in this place of degradation, that is a demonstration of Hashem Baruch Hamonim. Whereas if Hashem, as it were, had only joined us, or only linked himself to us, once we were at a higher level, then it wouldn't demonstrate that Hashem is there in all circumstances. Beautiful idea. It is, so we have to, according to the Slalom Rebbe, it's critical to emerge from Seder night with a reinforcement of Hashem Bachabonu, that we have been chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now we have three reasons. The contrast of the Maharal, the if only if, of the Kozitz and Magid, and the Slalom Rebbe that teaches us that we have to understand we have an unconditional love from Hashem. I said I would share some stories as well. We all know that it's not easy raising children in Bizman HaZeh. Not at all easy. Whatever we give them, it's not easy. And we daven and we beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to guide us and to guide them. But this idea that a person should come to a Seder night table and feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unconditional love, beautifully illustrated in the opening story of the biography of Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinemann. Anyone familiar with it? The story. There's a story there, beautiful story, about a young man who had drifted. He had drifted from his roots, drifted from his Masorah. And the parents lived in Bnei Barak, and he drifted far. And he came back, the encouragement of some friends, he came back for a Shabbos. On the condition that his parents didn't make any demands of him at all. Shabbos afternoon, his father goes to the shir, Marinei Zatzal. So he says to his son, as an offhand comment, would you like to come with? And the son says yes. After the shir, he introduces his son to Rabbi Aaron Leib, and he says, this is my son. He has gone on his own path. So Rabbi Aaron Leib actually said to him, as is quoted in the book, tell me, have you ever had Hirhurei Teshuva? He said, yes. And how many times? He said, four. He said, how long did that last? He said, 10 minutes. So Rabbi Aaron Leib gave him a very warm endorsement. He says, you know, you've had, that means that four times in your life, you have stood in places where even tzaddikim gemurim can't stand. And it seems that this encounter was the beginning of a turning point. But what I want to bring out from it is afterwards, the father said to Rabbi Aaron Leib, to the son, what made you come? What made you come? I was an offhand comment. I'm going, do you want to come? So he said, because when I was a little boy here in Cheder, in Bnei Barak, so Rabbi Aaron Leib came to feher the boys in Cheder. And he was told, keep it easy. Give each boy a sweet afterwards, keep it easy. He asked the boys questions, they got questions, answered good. Came to me, asked me a question, I got it wrong. He lowered the bar, he asked me a question, I got it wrong. He lowered the bar again, I got it wrong. Came past, all fine and passed for sweets. Maranev gives every boy a sweet. He takes out three and gives me three. So in Torah he says, it's not always about the achievement. We do our best. It's about the effort you put in to achieve. So I never forgot the love that he showed me at that moment in time. Therefore I was open to coming back to hearing from him again. So beautiful, says the Solomon Rebbe, we've got to feel the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is demonstrated by the fact that we're masachal b'gnos. We begin when we're not in a great place, and that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts connecting to us and gives us the opportunity to connect to Him. Avadim Hayinu. Okay. Avadim Hayinu, I'm going to accelerate a little bit, if that's okay. If we can, accelerate. Because we're only up to Avodah Mayinu. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a very, very simple idea, but I think so, so powerful. And it's said by Rav Moshe Shtenbruch. We all have the kasha, afinu kolonim chachamim, kolonim nevonim, even if we're all wise, knowledgeable, mitzvah, lein l'sapim b'yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, if you think about it for a minute, that clearly, sipur yetzias Mitzrayim is not an exercise of learning more. Kolonim yodim esatorah. Doesn't seem to be an exercise in learning more. Well, I mean, we'll learn more, we'll discuss it, but that doesn't seem to me the main point of the exercise. Otherwise, Kolonim Yodim HaSatorah, if you know it all, if you're a prime Kanievsky, you know it all, so that's it. It says as follows, in essence, putting it simply, it is a process to link mind to heart. Moyach to lev. That's what it's all about. The purpose is that we start off maybe with an intellectual exercise, discussing the story. But the goal is that we should absorb it, it should become real for us, it should become visceral for us, it becomes real, we can feel it in our own right. So we move, we unite mind and heart. How do you do that? You do that by telling a story. You tell a story well, you can bring others into the story. I remember when my kids were very, very small, so I once, for some reason, I don't know why, decided to tell them a ghost story. Just for a bit of entertainment. Ghost story finishes with me giving a great big scream and giving them a bit of a surprise. It backfired completely because I told it so well and they got so involved in the story that my daughter was with absolutely floods of tears, basically, because she became part of the story. tell a story really, really well, and you bring out the details, Hari Zeh Meshubah. That brings out the best of the story. Konamar Belasapa, Hari Zeh Meshubah. That brings out the best of the story. So I saw a story. I actually still have to identify the source. I know it's in one of my Sforim. I couldn't even find it on the internet. Of a Rebbe who goes to see a doctor. And the doctor says to him, what do you do? So he says, I am an engineer. So, doctor, with all due respect, you don't look like an engineer. What do you build? He says, yeah, I build bridges. Really? What type of bridges? I build bridges which are the longest bridges in the world and the shortest bridges in the world. What does that mean? I build the bridges from head to heart. In distance, they are the shortest bridges in the world. In Avoda, it's the longest bridge in the world. Now, and that is what the purpose of Haggadah. Now, when you see it this way, it's very, very interesting because it gives us some structure to the Haggadah. If the idea is that by involving ourselves in Sifri Yetzis Mitzrayim, we then feel the reality of it, we then feel the Chol Dovodah Chayav Adam Nirosas Atzmo, I then feel the emotion, the pain that goes with it. Not surprising that immediately after Haggadah we have Halal. Even before the meal, we have Halal. Because it ought to lead to a spontaneous outpouring of Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it should. If I've done the job properly, if I've absorbed it properly, then the mind should have engaged the heart, and the heart should respond to the spontaneous outpouring of Halal. okay. Havon Ischak Maloi. Havon Ischak Maloi. So the famous words of Paro as he assembled his cabinet together. Oh, sorry. I'll switch it off. He assembles his cabinet together. And the last few years, I've actually quite dramatized this around the table, because it's very clear from Rambam and others that the Paro couldn't just simply command the pogrom. It wasn't going to work. Because we'd been there 130 years and probably contributed to the economy, you couldn't command the pogrom. It just wasn't going to work. That's why it was Havon Ischakma. It was done very cleverly. It began, as the Rambam says, so I acted it out on my own Seder night last few years. I appointed various people who were my cabinet ministers. I, of course, took the lead role as Pharaoh. And I kind of very, very quietly tapped on the table. So this is a security meeting. Security meeting, we've got trouble in our northern border. Just want to raise a question. If there was a wall, how do you think Israelites would respond? I said to Ramides, what do you think? By the way, I've noticed that you sold your house to family Levi and your factory. They're doing very well, aren't they? When you start, the key to this prototype anti-Semitism began with questioning loyalty. When you question loyalty, you raise suspicion. When you raise suspicion, it's the next step is resentment. Maybe he's right. Maybe they are too powerful. Maybe I shouldn't have sold it so cheaply to them. When you create resentment, you open the door to hatred. And this was a process over here. Questioning loyalty, raising suspicion, resentment, hatred. And there's a beautiful sefer, Ramnosan Chochma, Ramnosan Ordman. And he brings out from the Sforno. The Sforno says something, a really fascinating Kiddush. The Sforno says that was here a few minutes ago. The Sforno says, okay, you'll have to find, it helps if you look at the Sforno, not at the Balatrum, to find what you want. Okay, listen to this. For Olam in Aretz, me atzmo, hovon ischak malo, lov olav ba'akifin, let's be wise with them. For Olam in Aretz, and they will leave the land, me atzmo. Without us driving them out. In other words, Paro did not intend initially slavery. He just wanted to tax them out. Make the taxes so draconian that there would be an exodus, right? Tax exiles. Now, now, very, very, very interesting. And what happened was, and Ross and Ordman amplifies this, that we began to Vehaim Kimlu Lamas Livnus as Orim. We undertook to get involved in communal works, as the Gemara says, we undertook to therefore to help pay the debts or whatever it was. And Reb Nosson Ordner says a remarkable chiddush, and he says that in fact it doesn't look as though slavery was originally part of the plan. We wanted to drive them out with various different other means, mainly taxes, it seems. But we then degraded ourselves by getting involved in meaningless menial labor. When we degraded ourselves, says Reb Nosson Ordner, then we opened ourselves to be degraded by them. When we degraded ourselves, we opened ourselves to be degraded by them. Very interesting. There is a famous statement, no one can insult you without your permission. In other words, when we lost self-respect, when we lost self-esteem, when we lost belief in ourselves, it was then exploited by the Mitzrayim, and then it became slavery that we suffer from. We are going to run out of, well, I'm going to run out of time. Let's just very briefly. So that's a very, very powerful idea. Very, very powerful idea. Very thought-provoking idea. According to Sforno, that to a certain degree, when we, and he's got a whole beautiful analysis of Sforno. How did it happen that we lost belief in ourselves? You should look up the Sforno. Very, very beautiful. Because at the beginning of Parashas Shemos, it recounts ideas that we know already from the end of Bereshis. What happened was that the new generation had lost touch with the old generation. The new generation had lost touch with the old generation. When you lose touch with the old generation, your origins, you lose touch with your identity. When you lose touch with your identity, then you lose touch with your own self-esteem. Who are we as a people? That's how he explains why Shemos repeats the death of the previous generation. It's not telling us new information. It's giving us the sibba as to how slavery came about. Very, very interesting. Okay. Now I'm a bit in conflict as to what to squeeze in the final minutes. I'll tell you, I wasn't planning on this, but it fits beautifully with the Sforno. So a friend of mine, a friend of his, was at a very high-end networking breakfast with the then Prince Charles. The gentleman who was there was a Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah Mitzvot, and he had Harmonious Deluxe with all the plates. As you know, Prince Charles, now King Charles, is a friend of Klal Yisrael, and he came over to him and started talking. And there was another Yid there who was not Shomer Kashrus, but wanted to muscle in the conversation with the prince. So he sidles up, gets close enough, and says, I'm also Jewish, you know. The prince turned around to him and said to him, so where are your plates? So where are your plates? If you're Jewish, where are your plates? Why aren't you doing what he's doing? That's when the prince respected. Yeah? And that's the point this foreigner is saying. When we lost touch with the origins, then we lost our identity. We lost our identity. We lost our own self-respect. Then we were vulnerable to them. Very, very briefly, I was going to take you through the Malbim on the Makkos. Do I have time to squeeze in one more beautiful story and three examples of Malbim's Chiddush on the Makkos? Can I do that? Or is it?
Yep.
Yeah. So a beautiful story. Manitzak al Hashem. This is simply a story about Tefillah that I heard this year in the name of originally told by Rabbi Cooper Zatzal. Very straightforward story of the Besht. So he had a shul and a small room next to the shul, and he was once teaching his Talmidim in the small room. And this goes from Manitzak al Hashem lekei Avosenu. Right. By the way, it says Manitzak al Hashem lekei Avosenu. We daven to Hashem, the God of our forefathers. Mayishma Hashem es kolenu. Hashem heard our voice. We thought we couldn't get there on our own merits. We needed to protect you. You knew my grandfather, my great-grandfather. No, it says, it's a beautiful story, which is that the Besht is sitting with the Talmidim in the side room. And after a few seconds, he says to the Talmidim, stop for a minute. Tell me what you can hear. They stop, and they can hear the most beautiful, beautiful singing, harmonious singing, multi-harmony. And they say to the Besht, what is it? We're presuming you're allowing us to hear the Malachim singing in Shemayim. He says, no, that's not what I'm lying to you. Go into the base of Medrash, see who's there. One of the guys goes to the base of Medrash, and there's a laborer there, whatever, Yitzchak. The laborer comes every day, not a Talmid Chacham, comes and stutters his way through a few tinnim every day. So the Talmid comes back and says, nobody there, just Yitzchak, the laborer. He says, wait a minute, what do you mean, just Yitzchak, the laborer? What you are hearing is the way his tefillah sounds in Shemayim. What you are hearing is the way his tefillah sounds in Shemayim. A sincere Elach, a person who's davening by Nitzek al Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, that's what it sounds like in Shemayim. So we all massively need Chizuk in Tefillah, especially this year, and Tefillah is the opportunity for that. I just have to tell you two little chiddushim from the Malbim. The Malbim has a chiddush in every single Namak, or every single one of the Makas. I was going to go through them, but we don't have time. I have got a shiur on the Torah way, not Torah way, yeah, Torah anytime. Torah anytime, I've got a shiur of the expanded version of this, so you can look it up for yourselves. But notice in the Makkah of Arba, it says, Vayal Arba Vayonach. Says the Malbim. In fact, it didn't. We always imagine that they swept in, like as I always imagine it, from elsewhere. Says the Malbim, no, it was a two-stage process. First, by Yael, they were in suspended animation, darkening the skies. Scary enough in its own right. And then, by Yonah, then it came down. One other chiddush is if you look at Parshas Dever, Dever, this is a bit of a lomdash chiddush, and that is as follows. It says two expressions. Mikol B'nei Yisrael, they didn't affect all of B'nei Yisrael, and it says Mikol Livnei Yisrael in the same sentence. You can look it up yourselves. Wait a minute, I'll give you the reference. It uses two separate expressions. One expression is Mikol Mikne Yisrael, and the other one is Mikol Livnei Yisrael. Mikne b'nei Yisrael and Mikol b'nei Yisrael. That is in Perek Tes Pasuk Dalet. So what's the difference? Mikne b'nei Yisrael and Mikol b'nei Yisrael. So the Malbim says, what happens if it's clear that any animals belonging to Klal Yisrael didn't die? What happens if you were a timeshare in a horse with an Egyptian? A timeshare in a horse with an Egyptian. I own it Monday, Tuesday. You have it? Wednesday, Thursday, I've got it. Did the animal die or not? So that's the Dik in the Pasuk. Mikol b'nei Yisrael, nothing died. But even Mikol livnei Yisrael, anything which was you had a share in it, also didn't die. Showing Kodesh Baruch Hu's specificity in the Makkos. We should all be zocher to Geulah Shlema. I'll say that on the Torah anytime, if you want to hear more, on Torah anytime.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.